Welcome to Under the Water Tower, a production of Fellowship Baptist Church, located in Marble Falls, deep in the beautiful Texas Hill Country. Join Fellowship's staff and leadership while they explore, study, and discuss Bible passages. Here are your hosts, pastors Joni Wallach, Misty Grimm, Daryl Fishbeck, and lead pastor Dr. Jamie Greening.
What I want to do today is different than we've been doing, but maybe not. So what I've noticed a pattern for this season is we tend to discuss the topic in the first half of the show, and then we move to the Bible in the back half of the show. So I really want to outline here the Bible we're going to do today, because I think this topic lends itself to biblical discussion, not necessarily exegesis per se, but discussion. We want to hit John 13. We want to hit Ephesians 5:16, and we want to hit Psalm 90. These are the places we're going to be today in our quest for the ultimate podcast. But before that...
okay, teacher.
Yeah, before that, so I said that's where we're going to go. But before that, let's think about the topic for just a moment and set us in.
Daryl, what is the topic?
The topic is officially...
He didn't know earlier.
Spiritual disciplines in an undisciplined age.
There Ooh. You go. So what is the biggest problem we have in exercising spiritual discipline? And I can't tell. Is it... First, I thought it was busyness. We're just so busy. I mean, I don't know anybody who's not busy. Even people who don't do anything are busy. They're busy doing nothing.
That one didn't make my list.
Dizziness? No. The second reason I thought of was distraction. We live in a terribly distracted age. And then the more I pondered this in my mind, the more I came to the conclusion, we're not busy, we're distracted. And the distraction looks like busyness because we can't focus. I mean, the ability for anyone to actually focus on a long article to read, a long program, anything that takes serious work or thought processes.
And distractions are different than interruptions.
Like you just interrupted me.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's
distractions are the fact that I'm sitting over here replying to a text while y'all are having this conversation.
You're not distracted. I interrupted you. And so there's a difference there.
Right. Distraction would be is while I say my words, and then when you start talking, I pick up my phone and start texting someone.
Yes.
That's what a distraction is. And I think all of us are that way. I noticed it yesterday. I was working, and the last couple of weeks has been really bad. I don't know if it's because I've been tired. When I'm fatigued, I do this more. I'm working on something, and it's good work. It's flowing. But for no reason, I will just stop and pick up my phone and begin to look. I'm not actually looking for anything specific. Yeah. I'm just looking.
That's distracted.
And so spiritual discipline is the opposite of distraction.
Right.
Whether you're talking about prayer or fasting or Bible reading or service, any of the things that you may do, it requires focus.
That's what I wrote. That was my first one on my list.
Well, talk to us then about focus. What did you write?
I just wrote keeping our focus on God and standing firm when necessary.
And that's as far as you got.
And that's as far for that one.
So how do you focus on God? How do you focus on God, Misty, when the whole world wants you to focus on something else?
You have to make it a point. You have to put some effort into it, and you have to make it. It doesn't just happen. You don't just wake up in the morning and just say, oh, you know, all my thoughts today are just going to be about God and then do nothing else. It's intentional, and you have to make it a point to keep your focus. If not, your focus is going to go in a gazillion other places. And it's easy to do.
Focus requires... Focus is a word we use to talk about what we see, right? Mm-hmm. So at a technical sense, focus refers to your eyes, lenses, things of that. Is it out of focus? Is it in focus? Mm-hmm. We've taken that word from that realm and turned it into concentration, mm-hmm. right? So when you concentrate on something, to concentrate on God... What does that actually mean?
Well, you have to make it it's a mindset. Okay. It's the transitioning of our minds, like we talked about in previous podcasting. Okay. You have to keep those things at the forefront of your mind.
Well, that's where I want to go there. Eventually, I want to get that place. So focus, distractions, busyness, Joni, you're nodding. Do you have anything to actually add?
My nod. Can't y'all hear that out there? I also think we live in a world where we want to achieve more. Like, we're thinking, how much can we achieve? And with spiritual disciplines, it's not really a you check it off and you achieve it. It's you're growing, but it's a personal growth. So it's not, I think, looked on from the world's perspective as like an admirable place to spend time.
I agree with that. So if you, one of the things, if you spend like all day reading your Bible or studying or praying, people will come at you and they'll say, so you wasted your day. That's right. Exactly how, or they'll say, I wish I had time to do that, which is another way of saying what I did was far more important than what you did.
And a lot of times too, I think it depends on your situation. Your current circumstance is talking about focus. I know for me, when I'm going through a hard time, and this it's almost opposite, because when I'm going through a hard time, it's harder for me to get into the scripture and then get into my Bible study than it is when I'm not going through such trying times. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, because when you are hurting or you're busy or you're depressed, whatever it is, confused, then your mind knows, I need to go the direction of the Lord. But your heart says to you, I just don't feel it.
I just don't feel it.
I don't feel it.
I can do that. I can figure this out on my own.
This is where it's not really a...
Hi, Daryl.
I'm not pushing back. Good morning, everybody.
Welcome back.
I've been waiting to listen.
Did you send your text?
I did.
Did they respond?
They did. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Everything's caught up.
Are they going to meet you for lunch or what?
No. You give me grief sometimes because I will harp on things like stillness and silence and solitude. And
why do you gotta make me the bad guy?
It was preemptive.
That was. I know I almost broke your equipment, but you have to take it on the podcast.
Because I think that some people, what they do is the God stuff, they have the discipline to build it into their routine or their schedule, but it becomes one more distraction or one more task. I read my Bible. I did my prayer time. Now I move on to this, that, and the other. And I think when you're talking about it's hard to focus, sometimes the hardest discipline is to be still. You know, Psalm 46:10, be still and know that He's God. Because a lot of times our practice is about trying to earn or transactional, as opposed to I'm going to carve out some time. And if I need to just sit here and be silent and listen and still my mind, because my mind is often the thing you talk about transforming your mind. Sometimes our minds are so busy, they're the thing that actually needs to come under control.
So for me, focus would be a little bit different with Psalm 46:10. That's a great passage. Be still and know that I am God. But focus says move beyond 46:10 and then spend some time contemplating that passage in context. And then the ultimate application to your life. So from the verses before, come, behold the works of the Lord to the ends of the earth. He brings desolation to the ends of the earth. He shatters the spear, breaks the bow, and burns the... he shatters the spear, breaks the sword, burns the shields with fire. These things, it's an anti-war movement. Mm. So be still in that context would be closer ascribed to pacifism in the face of somebody else's conflict. The Lord is the one who wages the battles. It's a deeper, and I will be exalted in the earth. I'll be exalted
among the nations.
And I think it's a discipline, too, to be still. But then it's a discipline to know when it's time to move. There's two sides to that. You know, you could just be still forever and stay stuck there, which is not what God
intends.
Then
I think you're missing the point. I'm just saying I think there's a balance.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I would think with all of the spiritual disciplines, there's a balance.
Absolutely.
You can't spend all of your time in service or all of your time. Mm-hmm. I guess you probably could spend all your time in prayer, but
you could, but it's not.
I think it has to be a balance. And
Jesus didn't spend his whole life.
Right.
Don't monks just pray?
They peel potatoes. Actually, they do. Through the Middle Ages, monks were the ones who did all sorts of manual labor to get stuff done.
They don't talk.
Some monks don't talk. Not all of them are that
way. They have a lot of time to do things. I would see how much time I would have to do things if I just stopped talking.
Well, let's start there.
So you couldn't be a monk, Misty.
No.
The Bible verse, the first one I threw out there, is Ephesians 5:16, which I can quote it in the King James, redeem, the time, for the days are evil. I take that as a serious spiritual discipline call. I believe most modern translations render it as make the most of your time, or make the time count. And I get that, right? That makes sense. But to me, there's something beautiful about that of redeeming the time. I'm going to take that. I'm not just going to make it count. I'm going to make that time count for the kingdom of God. I like the older rendering a little bit better. So time is of the essence when it comes. I believe this very much. Time is of the essence when it comes to spiritual disciplines. Because people will tell you, I don't have time.
But you could say that with anything. You could say that. I had a conversation with somebody the other day, and they said, I just don't have time to work out. I don't have time to run. I don't have time to do anything. You see people all over running. And well, he probably has to go to work after lunch. Well, he probably doesn't go to church on Sundays. I'm like, no, he makes the time to do these things. We all have the same amount of time, but it's what's important to you.
But not everybody redeems it.
Right.
Not everyone yeah. uses it to the ultimate good.
The old saying or the cliche that goes around says you can make the time to work out or be healthy, or you're going to be forced to take the time to deal with sickness.
Yeah, right.
Well, that could be, I get you on that one. I think we, at the end of the day, we do the things we want to do.
We want to do totally. What's important.
We delude ourselves in our mind by saying, if I only had more time, right. then I would read my Bible.
No, I agree, totally.
But you have plenty of time. You just choose.
And we all have the same amount of time. People think somebody else has more time than you. Well, they can do that because they do this. No, and we all have the same amount of time in a
there's
day.
There's a bit of arrogance in that, too, in that if I don't do the things that I have to do, certain things are going to fall apart. You know, and so the things that I am doing are more important, and therefore I have to do them, and therefore I don't have the time.
So I would like
it's somebody else's fault that I don't.
So I want to piggyback on a conversation we had in another podcast, which I think is going to be the last one in this series, on the idea of sacred versus secular work. I don't care what your work is. It could be, you know, a stock trader for the Dow Jones Industrial Market, or someone who pours concrete, or an electrician. It would probably be a good idea from time to time to take a day off from work. And I mean an actual day off where you say, I'm not coming in today, not because you're sick, not because you're going on vacation, not because you have a family gathering, but because you're going to read and pray that day. We expect church staff to do that sort of thing, although we don't. Oftentimes we don't. But
I think we're the worst about it sometimes.
We may be.
Because we think our job and the things we're doing are more.
One of the hard lessons I had to learn early on in ministry was to separate my devotional life from my work life in terms of sermon prep.
Boundaries.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So Missy's got one. Focus. Boundaries. The idea, it's so easy to fall in the trap of my devotional time is the same thing as my sermon prep time or my Bible study prep time, because they feel the same, but it can't be the same.
It can't be. Yeah, I've learned that.
Taking time off for prayer, for reflection, taking the time, boundaries. So the other verse that related to this theme comes from Psalm 90, which I adore Psalm 90. It's grumpy, old, sad Moses, right? He's about to die, and he's old, and he's grumpy, and he's not all that happy with God. But he says, Psalm 90:12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. And to me, boundaries is all about wisdom. It's not about what can I do or what I can't do. It's what's the good line for me, right?
Well, and the very last thing I wrote down here is what do we sacrifice too much of? And not having those boundaries, healthy boundaries in our life, we give up so much of ourselves, and that it's not beneficial to anybody. It's not beneficial to us. It's not beneficial to those that we're trying to help, because without those boundaries, it's just you're just in chaos, I feel like.
Well, and I used to misunderstand boundaries as, you know, this is how you keep certain things out, when really it's just, this is as far as I go. This is where my responsibility stops. And it's kind of like, I think they said it could be like putting a fence around yourself, but it's showing people where the door is.
Well, you're jumping ahead, because that's one of the conversations I wanted to have in relation to John 13. But let's just do it now, because you're already there.
Sorry.
We may loop around, but it's good. It's good. It's good. It's not bad. So like in John 13, that's the idea of service, that the key passage. Mm-hmm. And again, as I said in staff meeting earlier this morning, if you're listening to this and you're in the room right now, you were in a staff meeting. Kelly counts. But the Jesus washing the disciples' feet is the service image. Is there a limit to how much service you do? How much you give of yourself to other people?
Absolutely.
It's a little bit different than sacrifice. This is, and the answer has to be yes, because in washing feet, if you remember, Peter says, well, then wash my head
right.
and my hands too. And Jesus says, nope, this is enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we don't draw that same line. Another good parallel to that in terms of sacrifice and service is the Good Samaritan. I always draw this out to people because we in the church world, we love, and I mean it, it feeds us to be people's help. We want to come, let us help you, let us take care of you, and we will just keep doing it. But in the parable of the Good Samaritan, when he sets him up in the room, he leaves money on deposit, and he leaves him with the caretaker, and he says, I'll be by in a month or so. I'll be by later, and if there's any more debt, I'll square up then. And then he leaves. So many of us would want to be the one, I'm in the room, I washed him up, we did it all. So then we could talk about how we gave so much. No, the guy, he does his thing, but then he, because he's got a life to lead too. He's got a wife at home and seven children and work schedules he's got to do. This is the way, I just made that seven children up. You know, you understand what I'm saying? There are actually 100% limits to how much we
well,
do.
And if we do so much, then where's the power of the Spirit in that? Because it's not our job to be God. It's our job to come alongside and show like who God is.
Yeah.
But you have to, like, you can't do it for someone else. And I think that's the hard part with spiritual disciplines is with so many other things, you can do it for them. You can fix someone a meal. You can, like, there are things you can do for people, but with spiritual disciplines, you have to own that personally.
Well, and like, discernment too. Yeah, I think you have to lean in and know when enough's enough.
And time,
and that's different for different people, different situations.
And for me, time is the key component in that knowing when's enough's mm-hmm. enough. I only have so much time. If I spend all my time on one person or one problem, then everything else suffers.
Well, and boundaries, you know, I picture that it is a gate that we put around ourselves, and it's for our protection. But we have control over how much we open that gate. Mm-hmm. We open it a little bit for some, more for others, and so that's at our discretion and our discernment as to, you know, who we let in and how close we let them in, and that has to affect every area of our life.
And so much of that is led by the Holy Spirit.
Well, and I've been doing some reading recently.
Just right now on your phone?
No, not that
after
recently.
You sent your text.
I have been, but the image of a water wheel, and I know we probably don't have a lot of common usage of those. It's more of an older metaphor, but, you know, the river and you've got the water wheel. The water, the river flowing to the water wheel is what moves the water wheel. And so you could look at the water wheel and think, oh, the water wheel is producing water. Can I say water one more time? Or water wheel?
How many times you say water?
If you keep going, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
And so if we think of ourselves as like the wheel, Misty, and God's Spirit is his life source is the water. It's flowing through us, and so we've got to be in the flow, and so we've got to be receiving it as much as we're giving. It's the old phrase, you can't give from an empty cup. And so I think a lot of times we get confused and we think we're giving, you know, of ourselves, or we're doing something to impress God, and we burn ourselves out because we're not kind of, again, going back to the balance idea, we're not allowing God to pour into us, and then we pour that into others and know where we stop and somebody else could
and
take over.
And it's not just in the church ministry life. That's in our lives. You know, yeah. We had our little grandsons this weekend for
precious.
3 days.
They are just precious.
You know, we were
Misty,
they never
stopped.
Misty and
Greg looked so tired yesterday.
They don't ever stop moving or talking, but my heart is so
like
full.
You?
Me! Mm. I wonder where they get it. Yeah. But my cup is so full right now because I feel like that's what I needed. You know, and so
let me clean up your metaphor. Then I want to
Go ahead. It wasn't good enough for you. No, I see how it is.
It's the we don't know about water wheels. You're right. That's just not really a whoever wrote that thing that you stole from lives like in Maine and watches the look, they're spinning cloth on the inside. Whatever this is. The flotation device in your toilet. Right? The ball comes up when the water comes in, it moves it up. And then when you flush, it goes down. It's the water's just passing through.
So are you saying serving others is like flushing the toilet?
I'm saying you're the flotation device.
Okay, sorry.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm gonna flush for others this
week.
When
it works.
But when you think about how most of us pass water in this world, that's how most of our water gets passed. I fixed it for you. So the Bible passage. Make the most of your time, redeem the time because the days are evil. Agree or disagree with Paul's assertion that the days are evil?
So we studied this past week in the youth. We've been going through Ephesians.
Really?
And so
I just set that up for you.
You did. It was perfect. And one of the youth was like, because I was like, the days are evil, you know, like you'll get distracted. You'll, you know, all of the things about the days. And then one of the youth who is brilliant and bright said, well, the days aren't really evil because God created them and on this day and, you know, it was good. And I said, so who makes the days evil? Like, what makes the days evil?
So what's the answer?
I think we do.
We do. So the days themselves are neutral. It's like the internet. It's neutral. But what you do with it makes it evil or good.
I feel like that's the truth.
So, my feeling on it's not that the days are evil, it's that the things that happen in the day that pull us away
evil of the day
have evil intent, or they have an evilness to it. Even if it's innocuous, if it's pressing news but it pulls you away from your devotions, then it becomes an evil.
So could he be saying I don't know, he's using the word evil there, but I don't know what the original word is. Could he be, you know, just saying the
I knew I should have brought my Greek New Testament in.
The
probably cacon.
What's the word I'm looking for?
The distractions are evil.
Well, I was looking at one translation that said, while wine offers no lasting escape from the evil of the day, spirit certainly does. Indulge in your spirit intoxication. From that translation, it's almost kind of making the point that
You moved on to verse 18, which is a different verse.
Well, I did, but I'm trying to get the feel for what he's saying here. And that what are you either trying to escape from or plug into? And again, if you're a water wheel, I just had to do that. where is your life source coming from to survive the day, as opposed to the days are long and can be exhausting and problematic? And then are we just trying to escape from those? Are we trying to find a way to plug into God and thrive in the midst of? It was Jesus that said, yes, it was Jesus. Jesus, I'm quoting Jesus now. He's giving me a hard time when I quote things. He said, is it John 16:33? He says, don't lose heart.
Take heart.
In this world, you will have problems, but I've overcome the world. You will have problems. It's the guarantee that being a Christian doesn't mean everything's going to flow smoothly. So,
yeah, that's true. In every sense of the word, whether you are a water wheel or not. How about this setup? Okay, the question three on this Bible verse. How can we find time in a busy, distracted, unfocused, undisciplined, boundaryless world? Because the world is boundaryless. This is not unique to the four of us at this table. Almost everyone listening, when you go home, your work is still going to email you and call you and text you. And most of us will spend an hour or two every night at home working on something. There's no So where do you find time in this world that screams? It does not want you to have a moment to reflect. Because when you're reflecting, you're not buying anything and you're not producing anything. So what do you do?
Well, for me personally, when we go home, I've had to make the time of setting the boundary of a lot of nights my phone gets turned off. like off. Like if my kids need me or whatever, I think if it's a big enough emergency, they'll find a way to get to me. But I have to turn it off because I know I will be pulled towards it.
And your kids are grown.
They're grown, but you know, life happens. But at 8:30 or 9, it just goes off. And part of that is because I try to not stay up late. I am not a morning person, but I love the mornings. And what I mean by that is I love being awake early morning. I don't want to be around people. I'm not chipper or perky in the morning, but I love the quiet of that sometimes even 4:30 to 6 time period because it's quiet. A lot of the world is still asleep, so to speak, and the time for reflection is so much easier at the start of the day. And so that goes back to my evening routines where I have to do some things to set the stage to be able to wake up in the morning and you know, still get a decent night's sleep.
Is that when you wash your beard?
Yes.
So for you, the way you make time is you condense the evening so that the morning is bigger.
Yes.
But you had to work. Like, what made you come to that?
Usually exhaustion.
So see,
we learn by doing things the wrong way usually. Yeah.
And it's interesting as to what gets us to the point to where we're able to make these decisions and just say, you know, it stops here. I can't do that again for one more moment. Like that, we all get to that one point.
So you're crunching down your evening. Something's got to go. So I'm guessing entertainment. Would you call it entertainment?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I will watch a show or something in the evening, but it's usually like a series or something where I'm not emotionally invested. It's more of a down, powering down of my brain than anything.
So I'll flip that. It was what too. There's a movement in the 80s when I came of spiritual age. The movement was you must have a quiet time. That was the language they used in the morning. That's like the only spiritual discipline Baptist understood, a quiet time in the morning. I have come to dismiss the idea of quiet time. Just use the word. It's a devotion. It's prayers or personal worship. Those are better ideas than quiet time because quiet time denotes it kind of has a feel to it that may be artificial. Mm-hmm. Because your devotion might involve dance or music or loudness. It's not always quiet. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the emphasis was in the morning. This idea that if you are praying in the morning, you are more spiritual. Mm-hmm. That's when you should pray. And many, many psalms were, you know, I will awaken the dawn with my psalm. And I love that passage. And I've done that metaphorically and literally before. But never forget, Jesus prayed late at night. Mm-hmm. Paul preached so into the night that poor Eutychus fell over dead. you're laughing because yesterday the sermon was 8 minutes long, and there were like 4 people sound asleep in the sermon. I'm so sorry, guys. Anyway, you get to that place. I think it's just as legitimate to crunch down your morning where you sleep later. Right? Mm-hmm. If your prayer time is late at night.
Absolutely.
Not everybody is a morning person. Yeah. Some people. So there's nothing wrong with saying everybody else is in bed. It's midnight. I'm wide awake. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pray and do my prayers now and then sleep till 9 if that's what you need.
Absolutely.
If your work schedule allows for that, there are all kinds of constraints on your work schedule. But, you know, let's say if you work at 8. A morning person might say, I'm looking at 4:30 or 5, so I have a long devotion before I go to work. You may say, no, I'm not even, my mind doesn't work at that time of day. You wake up at 7, grab a cup of coffee out of the Keurig and shower and get to work by 8, but then you're up until midnight because from 10 to midnight you're praying. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you crunch the time down there.
But you find out what works for you and you're intentional about it. I think intentionality is part of the...
But the bottom line is something's got to go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it depends on what season of life you're in. You know, if you have little kids at home or if you, like, it just depends on your season of life.
And it reminds me of Lent.
What's in your mouth?
Sorry, I've got a cough drop. It reminds me of Lent in that
you should see Daryl's setup. He has got stuff. How about you leave me alone? From one end of the table.
I'm barely alive today. I'm here for this podcast just because I love everyone. So I'm giving so much of myself today.
There's a box of Kleenex. Then there's like used Kleenex.
He has two cups he's drinking out of.
And one's a ginormous Big Gulp, which may or may not be the same Big Gulp cup you've had
forever.
No, it's a new one.
It's a new one.
I hate that for the environment, but it is a new one.
Yeah. You, Mr. Styrofoam over there, and your turtle.
Until 7-Eleven or Stripes changes their cups, I don't know how to deal with that. So
this podcast brought to you by Stripes.
I love Styrofoam.
The 99-cent burrito, home of the Big Gulp.
Burrito.
They also have churros. Taco sauce.
And he's got his number 3 Enneagram coffee cup. He's got some notebook.
He's got the handout
papers, I gave him in staff meeting.
Tissue.
A book is open. A book is open. He's yet to look at it.
Into your hands I commend my spirit,
empty.
Father. As I'm crucified in this podcast today.
So that's sacrifice. That's the third part of this. So the essence is something has got to go.
Right.
And that may be, usually it's entertainment. I think that entertainment is the most logical thing to whack off. Mm-hmm. You don't need to cut off your family time. When you have little children, it does get hard, but one of the benefits that you enforce their bedtime.
Right.
That really helps.
I was curious what you think about this. I heard a teacher speak.
I have thoughts.
I heard a teacher speak on this once where they had a student talking about the similar topic. She was talking about having a newborn and just wrestling with, I'm so exhausted and I don't have time for prayer. And he just made the point. He spun it a little and he said, well, do you ever have time when you're just sitting there feeding them or they do fall asleep and you're holding them? And he went so far as to say to see the life of God in your child and that, that maybe God is meeting with you in that moment of being a mother and not discounting that connecting or communing with God has to be this, I'm by myself with my Bible or my journal or whatever.
Exactly. That's why I think the phrase quiet time is unhealthy because it denotes that idea that it's only when I'm at my desk or in my chair or under an oak tree with the perfect sky above me that it counts. I think that's detrimental. My belief system is that we have different seasons of our life where we do different things. And that's not just in terms of like having children. I notice through the course of a year, what I do in my devotions changes. It's not always the same thing.
Well, and that's, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's...
That's a distraction. It's not an interruption.
This is a full-blown interruption. But that's really when I started learning to, I wasn't always an early morning person. And when my kids were in school, that's when I didn't have time to do things, you know, get in the scripture. If I slept till my normal time and then I had to get up and get ready for work and get my kids to school and then there were sports and blah, blah, blah. So finally, I had to come to a point to where I had to make myself get up earlier. I'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd have my devotional time. And from then on, I've learned to love to get up early. And so I think that's important to say that whatever season we are in our lives, we do have to make those adjustments and cut and figure out what works best for you.
You make the adjustments, but when your child is in diapers or they're 3 months old or the newborn, this is not the time when you're going to have deep, quiet time, prayer sorts of things and revelation. Mm-hmm. This is when you are investing in your child. Mm-hmm. This is an act of service. But you can still act in, you can sing, you can praise. There's all sorts of things you can memorize that you can do in that time period that doesn't require, you know, that be still and know that I am God perfect motif that we all have in our head of what it's going to be like, because that's the different seasons. And then when the kid is older and you reach midlife, like where I'm at, you suddenly decide, oh, I have time if I just make the time.
Well, and people think because we're Joni still has kids at home and we don't.
They're barely at home.
And I guess that was my point is whenever, you know, people look at me now and say, well, you have all this free time because you don't have any kids at home. Well, no, I actually had more time, you know, I made the time when my kids were home. I've struggled now to find time a lot of times to do the things that I need to do. Whereas before, you know, I didn't have an excuse and I made the time for it. And so it's weird.
If I don't control my calendar, I am busier now than I was when.
Well, and I was even going to say, when you have kids, I think there's a lot of peer pressure as a parent to have your kid involved in every stinking thing that's out there.
That's a
different part of this discussion.
And that's a boundary.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. And as a parent, it may go to the point where you have to set some boundaries there. But I was also thinking, you talk about the routine in the morning and stuff. I can be a very routine person and prefer it that way. And was in a pretty good routine back in about 2004. And that's when Easton was born. And the girls, when they were born, they started sleeping through the night about 6 months, and I thought I was just this amazing parent because they were just, you know, so did everything right as little kids. And then he came along and wrecked my world, because for about the first year of his life, he had no schedule. And it was like I could not adapt or adjust, because he might go to bed at 10 o'clock one night and sleep till 2 and then want to be awake till 6. And then the next night, stay up till 1 and then sleep till 2 and then wake up for an, and it was just chaos, and it ruined me. I mean, I was eating so many late night bowls of cereal. I gained 50 pounds because I was just so exhausted
was
all the time.
It was chaos. No boundaries.
Really threw my world for a loop.
But you were serving. You were doing the work that had to be done.
I was trying, but at the same time, I was probably resisting it rather than maybe leaning into it.
Because you had this idea.
I was trying
to
force life to be what I needed it to be.
Again, this is a formative thing for me. I do all that time when I can, alone, praying, retreating. Because there will be seasons when I can't, right? I build up the strength and the spiritual stamina and the growth patterns when I have seasons of growth, because there'll be seasons when I can't.
But then you have to be in those seasons when you can't. You have to be willing to see it and allow it, because that's when we fight it, because then the guilt and the shame of I should be and I
all that stuff
starts.
I talked yesterday about guilt and shame has absolutely no place in the Christian life.
I agree, but it's rampant.
It is rampant, but I think it's sometimes it's guilt and shame. Sometimes it's selfishness. When the kid won't go to sleep, Can I not just get an? I mean, every parent
pride.
An hour. Yeah,
I have pride on my list.
So, time is an important part of our spiritual discipline, and it is time for us to take our little halfway break.
If you didn't
break.
Say that, I was actually about to take that and run with it. So well done.
Kelly's going to give us this our important middle stuff, and then we'll come back with some two other aspects of spiritual disciplines in an undisciplined world.
You are listening to Under the Water Tower, a ministry of Fellowship Baptist Church located in Marble Falls. We would love for you to join us for worship. Visit our website for worship times at fmf.life. Do you have questions or suggestions on future topics for Under the Water Tower? We would love to hear them. Send us an email to office@fmf.life. If you like what you hear and would like to support this ministry, visit fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give.
It was requested during the break that I actually get the Greek New Testament, and let's look at this verse 5:16, Ephesians 5:16. The first three words are the most fascinating part of it. Exagorazomenoi, which is a really long compound word with a participle ending at it, but it has the root word is agora. So even if you don't know Greek, you've probably heard the word agora, which is the marketplace or buying. And it's a participle, buying, and then ex is like the bring out of or undo, that kind of thing. So it has the connotation of a buyback, which is why I think that idea of redeeming from the old King James is a really good translation of this, to redeem or to buy back. And then the word for time is kairon, which of course there's famously two kinds of time in the Greek world. There's chronos, which is what a clock does or a stopwatch would measure, and that's literal time that is spent. But then there's kairos, which has more to do with we had a good time, or the time was meaningful. That's not a measurement. It's about the quality of it, or that was rotten time. That was wasted time. That's kairos. And so moment would be a good, so maybe a good rendering of this very first part of the passage would be to buy back the moments. Then because the days, or for the days, are evil. And I thought earlier, I guess that maybe kakon was the word, which, if you're interested, is loosely connected to the word kaka, which, if you know what that means, is because you had a baby. It means bad. One of the first phrases I ever learned in Greek was mega kakon esti mega biblion. And that was their insistence that a big book, mega biblion, is a big bad thing. They don't believe in big books. But it's not. It's not kaka. It's not kaka. It's ponerei, which is evil, wicked. The same word used to describe the devil, basically. The poneron is the evil one. So it gives you the sense that they're inherently wicked, the day. So which you wanted me to do that.
Thank you. Which we would think that that was kind of in our culture, but, you know, this is not just our culture. This has been from the get-go.
Paul is talking to Greeks who know what they're talking about when it's about the difference in time.
Well, mm-hmm. And I think, too, the bottom line context is, or maybe I'm reading into it here, is he's saying, you've got to be, I used the word intentional earlier, because culture is not going to favor you. It's not going to make it easy for this to be a thing. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to work at it, put mm-hmm. some effort to it.
Well, and it's been that way, like Joni said, you see Moses and the Israelites, you know, they keep falling back, and then you just see it progressively through, you know, the judges, you see it through the New Testament, and then, you know, Paul, don't go back to your old ways, you've seen better, you've had better, and so I think it's just, I mean, are we ever going to learn?
No, the answer
is no. Are we ever
going to
get there?
But our spiritual disciplines, if we can focus in on them, they help us grow individually.
But it's focus, yeah, I think a lot of it is focus.
But I'm still going to make the same mistakes over and over again.
Sure.
So John 13 was the other Bible passage. I've already alluded to it once because Fishbeck grabbed me by my beard and pulled me that way.
My favorite thing to do.
Well, we're just hoping you survive long enough to make it through the podcast.
I don't know.
I can't paint the picture to you guys enough how much I think he has a fever.
Wrapped in a blanket?
He's wrapped in a blanket. He's got a cup of
bleeding out of my eyes.
Shivers.
He's just really wretched. He's beginning to get blotchy.
I'm evil.
His skin's blotchy.
Water wheel.
Is there blood in your urine? He's just not doing well at all.
Not yet.
So he's in pretty bad shape over there. So we're going to try and move these things along as best we can. John 13 is the picture of service. And so much of this gets communicated, especially this time of year, and I personally have spent a lot of time on this. But the principle I get, right, I think we all read it, and serving, you're going to do the ugly thing. But the problem we have with this image is, and I think maybe Jesus did this on purpose. Of course he did. He's God.
You think maybe?
I think maybe he did it on purpose. Did you hear that cough? I'm not exaggerating over here. We're all going to be...
I'm going to open a cough drop, so you're going to have to smell the
more trash
mentholyptus.
Black plague before this is all over.
I think this podcast is just sucking the life out of me.
It's brought to you by Ricola.
I need to take some time and go spend with my water wheel.
So I get the image of washing the feet. You're going to serve. You're going to do something for somebody else. It's nasty. But the problem is there's just no direct one-to-one parallel in our culture or actually any modern culture. There's nothing that matches. So you're left with, well, how do I do what Jesus did when if I were to show up at someone's house and start washing feet, I would probably get asked to leave and not come back.
Yeah, it freaks people out.
Or invitations to other things. I don't know that this is a good model for us. So you start thinking through, okay, so it's an image, it's a visual metaphor for servant. But in this world in which people are so distracted, so unfocused, they have no boundaries, they are busy, how do you serve these people, our culture, when they don't even know what they want? they don't know what they need. And I believe that very much. They mm-hmm. do not know what they need. How do you serve them? I just now learned that the book he has open is Brennan Manning. Because he's so distracted by what I'm saying. He has picked up a book
and
is reading
things that fit.
That's called proof texting.
That's what I do every week.
So, Misty, I heard you chime in. You agree with that presupposition?
I do, and I'm thinking of one person in particular in my life that
don't talk about me that way.
Fits that image. He's not a Christ follower, but yet he's. And I think it's just discernment again. I don't know if it's relationship that you have with people that you know serving. And if we're comparing it to Jesus washing feet, it's lowering ourselves to serve someone else. And it may not be someone that's it's asking for it. So I think you have to know that person, maybe personally, so before you can offer up something to that. Degree. And not always. You I mean, it doesn't always have to be that. But
you take it directly to the personal level.
I do. Just well, for this particular person that I have in mind.
And that makes me think of the verse that I think is often misused, and it's the don't cast your pearls before swine. It's
pride.
That if we... No, it's if
we feel that every Sunday after a sermon.
If we're looking to serve people, a lot of times we try and give them what we think they need as opposed to what does a swine want to eat? Not pearls. Give them something that they actually need,
right.
Which requires you to get to know the person and find out how to meet that need.
Yeah.
I need to know where their need is rather than me going and thinking, I know how to fix you. I know
what
your problem is.
But I do know how to fix them.
You know, somebody's moving to a home. Well, do you want us to help you move? We have a truck. We have boxes. No, it's okay. We got it. Okay, no. So we show up the day. What can we do? We're here to help you. You know, and I think on that type of a personal level, but it can be as much as helping someone in the grocery store. You see the little ladies and the little men that can't reach the top shelves, and
that's
of
me.
Course we climb to get them what they need. But can I help you?
I was about to say you're not much taller than a little old lady. So
you your ways, Daryl.
You
service.
Use we in the plural, the royal we. She means her.
Me.
We climb.
Don't know me. We climb. But holding the door open for someone, you know, it can be things like that too, as far as service.
It's frustrating for me that, and I wasn't being flippant, this may be arrogance or pride, but when I take it to the personal level. There are so many people's lives. I can think of people in our church, in my neighborhood, in my community, in my family. Their lives are out of control.
Yes.
They have issues, so many issues. And I simply think if they would just let me help them at this level, I can tell them what they need. They don't know what they need.
Sometimes.
It's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe you're tapping into, and I don't know if this is, I'm overthinking this, but at some point, creating the relationship or the safety, it's we don't know how to ask for help,
right?
Or even recognize I need help. I'm horrible
that's
at it.
That's why we have to
and
know,
so having people in your life people. That you know I can go to and I can be transparent, vulnerable, and honest, and they're going to help me know what I do
well
need.
And what's
going
to be more beneficial, like Jamie said, I know how to you want me to tell you how to fix that, and I can tell you that, you know, I can give them money all day long.
As but long as it's not an electrical problem.
Helping them budget that money, you
I
know,
fixed it.
It is not going to help them.
And broke three other.
But if you think about in what's beneficial
sorry,
to
Misty.
People.
Yeah. Joni, you're just going to have to get in there, man.
Just dive in.
It's really hard today. If you think about the show Hoarders, like there's a lot of people that can look at someone with all of the stuff and say, I can fix that. I can go clean their house and I can fix it. And I would look at that situation and think I could fix it too. But it's not a physical need that they have. It's a spiritual
what's
brokenness.
Gonna help them
it's an emotional brokenness. And so, and I know a lot of times we think we can fix that too, but it's not us fixing it. It's
well, and are you fixing a symptom as opposed to the actual issue? Because until that person realizes
so how do you
my hoarding is a problem, if you go clean their house, they're going to turn around and re-hoard.
So you go back
that's
to
a word.
The you re-hoard. I hoard.
No, I re-hoard.
I re-hoarded. I pre-hoarded and I post-hoarded.
There's a D on the end of that. Re-hoard.
Unhoarded.
Present hoarder. Present hoard.
I have been de-hoarded. These are all the things that happen to the horde. So if I go back to the John 13 premise of serving, then how do you serve the hoarder who doesn't know what they know what they want, but they don't know what they need.
Right.
And I think that's where for this, and I don't know if there's a hard answer to it. It requires wisdom and insight, but we have a whole culture. You use the hoarder. Our whole culture has, for the most part, lost its ever-loving mind.
Well, and I'm always going back to the 12 steps and AA, and part of that premise is the person has to come to a place where they admit and own and understand my life is out of control. I'm trying to manage it, and I'm not succeeding.
That's what I was trying to tell you, too, when you were talking about the money, giving people money opposed to, you know, helping them.
It's not going to fix
it's not
going to
fix the problem.
What you say is true in terms of self-help. We're not talking about self-help. We're talking about service. Jesus began to wash the feet of these disciples. They did not know what he was doing, why he was doing it, what it meant, or that they even really needed it in this moment. He just did it. No one else thought to do it. Right? Which in this moment, that's always bothered me about Jesus washing their feet. If this was a custom, and I believe it was a custom, but if it was such a heavy custom that someone washes the feet when you come in, why doesn't someone look at, I don't know, Philip? We all have a rotation system for who washes feet. It's your night to wash feet. Why doesn't somebody else? Why does Jesus have to be the one? It's something that they need, but no one, everyone's so busy eating or talking or the busyness, they don't know. So for service to take place, we find out what they need that they don't really even know. For the hoarder, that becomes a problem. For a person who has the addiction, it becomes a problem. For the family who hasn't had dinner at the dinner table with everybody together for 2 months because every kid's in three different after-school things because the school district is determined to destroy families. You just this flow that we have. I don't know.
So do we.
I'm ready to move on.
So do we try and figure out what they need and then just give it to them, or are we in a position where we say, Holy Spirit, guide me and tell me what to do, and I'm going to do the thing and just leave it, are we focusing on, do we focus on the person? Do we focus on ourselves? Some combination of both?
I don't know. I think I can tell you where I'm at, like with preaching ministry. That's the biggest thing that I do with my time. And I've decided to try and give them what they need, not what they want. And what people want is cliche and feel good isms and comfort. And I've actually made the decision to make them about as uncomfortable as I possibly can every week. And what you see there is a disconnect. Because what most folk, they think what I'm trying to do is comfort them and make them feel good about themselves when I'm not. So their brain is
they're not falling asleep. They're trying to figure out what the heck's going on.
Huge cognitive dissonance. As a Christ follower, as a church, you start thinking if we begin doing sort of the same thing at a ministry level, I believe you'll see cognitive dissonance. They won't quite understand what we're doing. It won't make it, just like the apostles did not understand Jesus.
What's that quote that says, I've come to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable or something like that?
It's an old preacher quote.
It reminds me of like at Christmas. Used to, we'd ask our kids, what do you want for Christmas? Well, they want the brand new video games, new toys, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to like that. You're going to play with that for 5 minutes and then it's going to be gone, broken, whatever. No, I want it. What happens? They get it. They play with it 5 minutes. They're bored with it. So, we started changing our tactics, right? And so we started just getting our kids what we knew they were interested in, what we knew they would like and enjoy. And it turned out to be so much better because we know them. And we know what they want. It's not just what they wanted. It's what we knew they would want.
I'm just thinking about your husband. You know what you want? Post hole diggers.
You want to buy me fancy stuff for Christmas.
Because we're going to build a fence this summer. And you're thinking, what I want? Post hole diggers.
I love what you do with your family. Now, though, for Christmas, you give them a vacation that you're mm-hmm. going to go with them, like to the beach or something later. And I love that because to me, that's buying back your time. It's buying back yep. those moments.
But we had to get to that, right? Mm-hmm. We had to get to that conclusion after things didn't work and it was just, finally we figured out that this is what works for us.
To chase a rabbit, one year I asked our kids, I said, all right, we can do, you know, all the things you want, you know, what do you want, make a list and we'll try and get what you want. Or we can give you like a large amount of cash, you know, let's say $500 each and we'll all go shopping or you can get what you want. And I think they agreed to it, but I think it was Haley who was like, you know, I'd kind of rather go the other way because y'all usually spend more when you get us these things. So I was like, okay, I didn't even catch that. You caught
She's
it.
She's using her brain.
She redeemed the time.
Yeah, she did.
I do remember a time where I had a student in my class that their family was experiencing homelessness. And there was an organization in the town that said, we're going to really dote on this family for Christmas. And the mom came to me and she was just crying after they had received their gifts. And I said, oh, that was, you know, so special. And she said, no, they don't get it. Like, they don't get that we have nowhere to put these things. Mm-hmm. Like, we really need time together. We really need a
house,
kitchen table. We really need a place to stay.
A down payment on an apartment.
Yeah.
First and last on an apartment would be great.
Right. And so she was just, she was like, we have all this stuff, but
where do we put it?
What do we do?
What's it
going to
be? How does it benefit us?
Well, sometimes we do service out of what we think somebody
needs.
Because
it's
about what do they really need?
It's about you feeling good about yourself.
We're supposed to do something, so let's come up with some service projects rather than finding out what.
I'm convinced most of the Christmas ministries really miss the point. It's mm-hmm. all about,
yep.
it has a cultural guilt that's associated mm-hmm. with it, that we do these things to help people. But in reality, it's you're either. One of my questions for this, I had three questions for each of these, and we've kind of really gone off straight with that. But was the,
You're welcome.
The idea of enabling. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what passes for Christmas benevolence ends up being an enabling of poor choices and bad stuff, mm-hmm. rather than actually helping people. Now, I'm not against comfort. I mean, don't read me wrong. But what they really need is first and mm-hmm. last. Mm-hmm. That's what they really need. Mm-hmm. You bought this child an electronic toy because that's what kids get. Mm-hmm. Well, that may be what your kid gets.
Right.
That kid needs a pair of shoes, a
some
good
underwear,
coat,
some socks. Underwear.
And I don't have the full context of this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I've
Has
seen...
Has that ever stopped you before?
No, that's why I'm going to go ahead and say it. Is I've seen recently that one of the CEOs of Kellogg's cereal... in the context of trying to help families save money on groceries and stuff, has made the suggestion, well, families should eat cereal for dinner. Mm. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
I've eaten cereal for dinner.
I have no problem with it, but
Captain Crunch,
people,
Raisin Bran.
How about you lower your prices so they can afford groceries? Don't tell them to eat your product so you can make more profit. I mean,
I'm not a communist. So I have a hard time with telling a company to lower their prices.
No, but I'm saying to stand in the face of people who need first and last month's rent and say, here's my solution. Make me richer. And I'm going to be totally but I'm going to sound like I'm actually trying to help you. To go back to Joni's point.
I would like to go. This is not where I wanted to go. But waffles are my bane of my existence. I will not eat a waffle. I'll eat meatloaf before I eat a waffle. Mm-hmm. And you guys know half about meatloaf. Waffles are awful. And it's not because they're awful.
Well, awful waffles.
Awful waffles.
Awful waffles.
And a water wheel.
When Kim and I first got married, someone gave us a waffle iron as a wedding present. It was wonderful. And then we got poor real fast because I went to school to learn things. And I was a full-time student. I was also working. And we had a baby. And we had no money. But waffle powder, waffle mix, was the cheapest thing you could get. I mean, it was really cheap. So for 35 cents mm-hmm. in 1994... Mm-hmm. Literally, this waffle mix required no eggs, no milk. It was just
water.
Just add water. So you mix waffles. For the first week, this is great.
Living large.
All the money we're saving.
All the money we're saving. But after about a year and a half of waffles four times a week, three or four times a week.
To pay for new clothes because you're gaining weight.
Because that's all
blood pressure.
That's all you can
diabetes.
Afford. Is the waffles because you're spending it on Similac and baby diapers and doctors and all the things your money's going to, because you don't have the money and you're working and you're going to school. It's when we finally got out of that hole, right, and I could eat something else, I made a vow. I will starve to death before I stick a waffle in my mouth. Now, you could go back to Jamie 1994, 1995 and say what he needed was food, something, not a waffle. But looking back on it, I'm not sure that's what I needed then. Mm. You know what I really needed?
Diapers?
No, to get sick of waffles.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's one of the things that makes us stronger, mm-hmm. is going through hard times. And one of the, I think, wrong assumptions or pre-understandings we have about life is that the ministry of the church and Christian ministry is to remove hardship from people's lives. That's not accurate. Mm-hmm. We need to make it bearable. What I really needed was someone to pray with. I was lonely mm-hmm. during the, and my wife was lonely too.
Yeah.
For those of you who may wonder, when you're in grad school, especially a seminary student, for us, it was some of those loneliest times of our existence. Mm-hmm. The churches we were in didn't care, didn't love. Mm-hmm. The people we were going to school with didn't care, didn't love. It's just miserable mm-hmm. Existence. That's what the food is maybe the way I took all that energy mm-hmm. and put it onto it. But hardship is not bad. It's inherently not bad.
I'm going to say this real quick. I have a friend of mine, and a friend of hers was just diagnosed with cancer of some sort. And so my one friend told her friend, you just, you know, be going, walking through someone with grief is hard. You just be who she needs you to be at all times. You just be who she needs you to be. And I said, well, sometimes that's at first, yeah, you be who they need you to be. But then at some point, you have to be prepared to be that someone that they don't particularly want you to be. You have to be that one that says, okay, you know, we've spent this time here, but now it's time to let's do this, you know. And I think that's kind of what you're going for there, too. Mm-hmm. You can be there with the person, but you also have to be the person.
And a good good relationship creates the safety so that then maybe you can be challenge and help someone
and
grow
help, yeah,
through
and
a
help
difficult
them.
Time.
Yeah, and I'm sad and I'm sorry,
need
but
to
here we are. Yeah, you can't always just be that person and match where that person's at. You have to do, you know, what you feel like that person needs, not what they want, but what they need.
Well, it's just like the hoarder again. You go back, you clean the house, you may have just enabled them. Now they have a clean house to start over again, and they needed to wrestle with something.
So I shared my sad waffle story. All four of us around here and everyone listening has a hardship that made you stronger. And I could tell, you know, the chicken and the egg coming out don't help him. And we all know these sorts of things, but it's hard to go through because our instinct is to always help, which takes us to the third aspect of spiritual disciplines I wanted to talk about today, and that's sacrifice. So we had time, service, and sacrifice. For Kim and I, those year and a half, that was a sacrifice we made. We knew that the Lord had called us to ministry. We knew that we had to be at seminary. And it was a sacrifice that we made willingly. It was hard, mm-hmm. but we made it. Mm-hmm. And we would do it again. There's not much I would change about that part of my life. So how much do you sacrifice? The key Bible verse here is, of course, that verse from Romans 12. Present your bodies as living sacrifices. So don't ever tell me, well, sacrifice was Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. Killing animals on the altar was Old Testament, and we don't need you bringing in turtle doves to slaughter on our nice wooden altar table that we have that we're so happy with, because that'd be a mess to clean up. Mm-hmm. But the New Testament teaches a living sacrifice, not a dying sacrifice, but a living sacrifice. And so the question I have is that idea of, if Jesus has already sacrificed for our sins, if he paid the ultimate sacrifice, why do we have to? Mm-hmm. Why is any sacrifice required of us? Mm-hmm. Discuss amongst yourselves.
Well, I think, and I'm just going to leave that out. Upon salvation, if Jesus took everything about us that was wrong, all of our imperfections, he cleanses of our sins, but if he was to take away everything and make us perfect, and we were perfect as he is perfect, then what purpose would he serve?
I am. What we are you talking about, Misty?
Well, you would go straight to heaven.
Exactly.
Right? Mm. So that really is the essence of the question. Why are you still here?
He has to leave those things in us so that we need him.
I believe that he came and lived and died and came back to life as an example to show us where life is found. It's in surrender. It's in self-sacrifice, trusting God through that and allowing God to resurrect life in us. And I think it's a repeated path. I used it a few podcasts ago, got mocked a little bit about it. But
if you go to architecture or archaeology, we're done.
It's order, disorder, and reorder of life. And sometimes that's willingly I don't want to use the word model. That sounds too transactional, external. But he showed us where the life.
Well, I'm going back to Old Testament. You know, he made the Ten Commandments and the laws were so much that he made it that way so that nobody could uphold that and nobody could keep to that.
To get to a place where said, I need help.
Yeah.
When I think of that scripture, I think of like our everyday being worship. So if worship is the response to encountering God, then our life as living sacrifices would be part of worship. Do you disagree?
No, I agree. Worship is a part of our sacrifice, but it's not the only part of our sacrifice. So for me, and I know we got to wrap this up, we're waiting an hour already.
Hour five.
So for me, I start thinking about the roles of sacrifice in our life now, fasting, money, and self-denial.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put worship, I think worship is a part of it, but I think these other aspects are there. So what role does money play in our sacrifice? Is that expected? Self-denial is a part of sacrifice where, you know, I want to go on this big vacation, but I really shouldn't, or those sorts of things. I really want to eat the cookies, but I'm fasting.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of sacrifice that I'm making. Now, we don't think of fasting during the season of Lent as a sacrifice in that way, but it actually is. I'm giving it back to God. Mm-hmm. I'm transforming my mind by doing that. What role do these play? Why do we only seem to emphasize the money part of it?
I think anything that pulls you away from God and tries to get into that relationship, separates you from him, has to go. And I know that sounds very black and white, but I think it is black and white. And for me, sacrifice, when I think of that, I think of the sermon yesterday. Jamie talked about those relationships that maybe it's time to just walk away from. And that doesn't mean that you hate the person and that you wish bad things on the person. You can love the person from afar, but sometimes relationships that aren't good for you, you know, sometimes you do have to let things like that go.
So you sacrifice those.
So sacrifice that.
Mm.
I think
because I want them. I want to, because I think I can help and I can change and I can do. But then when it's pulling me further away and not pulling that person to my side, but I'm going to their side, then there's got to be some boundaries there.
And not even sides, but just pulling you further away from God. Mm-hmm. You know, not further away from them necessarily, but further away from
That's what I worry about.
Yes.
The things that pull me away, I sacrifice. But also sometimes a sacrifice is just an act of devotion.
Yes.
And of love and a free will offering.
Mm-hmm. I think this makes it hard too in our culture today because we compartmentalize so many things. We have
that's just you.
We okay, sorry, never mind. but we have our work and we have our friends and so sometimes God becomes something that is not a part of our life but just is compartmentalized on. Okay,
we justify.
This is Sunday, Wednesday,
and we justify.
And
it's not a relationship; it's just one more activity. Church is.
Right.
Oh, I hate that model of church's activity. Mm-hmm, which
absolutely.
Which takes me to, I have a whole other list. I mean, I got a whole other page.
Well, let's do it.
No, we don't have time. But my page goes to listed two different lists, right? One list is society's assault on discipline, and the other was the church's assault on discipline. So let's do the church first, because that's like where we because that's so much of my life. The church assaults our spiritual disciplines because we create such busy schedules of activities.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of all our here in our building, there's something almost every day here. Well, that's you're pulling people away from perhaps service or reflection or prayer mm-hmm. because they're busy. And our church is not as bad as some because we think about this critically. We make it so easy to slide in and out. In fact, it's become mm-hmm. a virtue since the 90s for churches to make it easy for people. Mm-hmm. I can think of a couple of churches locally here where their whole mindset is just show up. Mm-hmm. If you'll just show up, that's all we'll ask of you. Mm-hmm. Maybe put some money in the plate. We're not going to ask you to change a diaper or teach a class or serve or bring a banquet meal. We're not going to ask you. We'll just show up because you make it so
And COVID made easy. That so much worse.
You're right. So now you've taken all aspects of discipline out of what it means to be in the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is show up. That's like saying I get credit for exercising by watching somebody else exercise.
Swiping my key card.
yeah. Another way we don't challenge assumptions, we reinforce biases at church. That's we were sliding into because the discipline says I'm going to go to my place of worship and I'm going to worship other people and I'm going to hear the word of God and I will be transformed. That's the goal of discipline is transformation. Mm-hmm. But what we want and what churches give is not transformation and challenge. What we give is comfort and bias affirmation. Mm-hmm. You're just fine. Mm-hmm. And we preach a cheap grace that eventually mm-hmm. falls apart. Mm-hmm. This is why so many people don't hold. Those are the assaults. So in 1 minute, questions or comments?
We want to hear your other list.
Oh, the other list is society's assault on discipline. So I've already talked about always working, right? On your PC or your computer, always at work. I've talked about schools already trying to kill the family. And not the way you think. When most Christians say the school's after the family, what they mean is what's being taught. Mm-hmm. I'm not after that at all. No. I think that mm-hmm. I believe in an open, honest dialogue. I'm talking the schedule they keep.
They don't have a problem asking for sacrifice.
Yeah, they have no problem asking. And then the schools always want us to bless it.
And I think that they're trying to fill in a gap, and we saw this during COVID too, that schools try to fill in a gap that really it wasn't designed to fill in.
We ask our schools to do so much more than they should.
I love our teachers, and I think that there's...
Teachers are superheroes. I believe that. I'm talking about the system in general.
But I think the whole system, and it's not our school board.
I think society comes at us undisciplined. Look at the way people drive. Mm-hmm. Just the habits of people driving. No one follows the speed limit or follows the laws for driving. And that's why so many people die and there's so many accidents. Why? We're undisciplined. Mm-hmm. We won't. If I drive the speed limit, it'll take me 5 more minutes to get there. So I'm going to speed and be dangerous and reckless and get there quicker because we're undisciplined. I got to finish my list.
No, go ahead.
Credit card debt, obesity. And just the way we dress. If you are so undisciplined, you won't put on a pair of real pants or even cargo shorts to go to the dollar store. This is a problem.
That's why you go to the dollar store, because the dress code is less.
There is no dress code.
Walmart.
The dollar store in my town, the police are always there, right? We're undisciplined. And this is society's assault. As it always says, you don't have to be disciplined. Mm-hmm. You can buy
There's
what
no
you
standards.
Want.
There's no standards.
And you're back to the whole distraction of things. Distractions are a form of numbing. And so we're just totally numbing out and avoiding facing things.
We'll go back to driving. I can remember being terrified to drive.
Mm.
And now we're so lax and undisciplined, we won't stay focused on the road. We'll be on our phone, texting, talking. I've got people I know, I love, I care about. If they're on a long drive, that's when they call me because mm-hmm. they're unfocused and undisciplined. So they're driving in a very undisciplined way. They're not acting as if I've got this huge piece of metal mm-hmm. going 70, 75 miles an hour down the road with 3 feet separating me from another vehicle of similar size going the opposite direction. This is a very dangerous place to be, mm-hmm. but we're distracted because we're undisciplined.
Yep.
Anyway. Love you guys. we probably should wrap this up.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff.
We'll have more podcasts coming later on season 47 of Under the Water Tower. Love you
two
all.
More.
See you soon.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Under the Water Tower, a podcast dedicated to honest discussion of the Bible. To donate to this ministry, just go to fmf.life/give. That's fmf.life/give. Just a reminder to subscribe to Under the Water Tower on Apple Podcast and Spotify. That way you'll never miss an episode. Help us to spread the word about our podcast by talking about it and sharing it on your social media. Thanks again for joining us. On behalf of Under the Water Tower, I'm Kelly Trepain.